North Untapped is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. On Monday, January 9th, Defence Minister Anita Anand confirmed that Canada will be purchasing 88 F-35 fighter jets from Lockheed Martin, a fighter jet that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau once promised that he would never buy. The purchase, which will see the F-35s replace Canada's existing fleet of CF-18s, follows more than 7 years of negotiations, broken promises, ongoing technical concerns, and changing cost estimates. Indeed, it remains unclear exactly how much Canadian taxpayers will pay for the planes. A leak from the Department of National Defence in December suggested that Canada could be paying more for the jets than what other countries have been billed already. Critics who oppose the purchase have argued that the true lifetime cost of the jets stands at $77 billion, a sum they say could be better spent on education, housing, and addressing climate change. The first 9 F-35s must be delivered by no later than December 2027, and the final jet must be ready for takeoff by no later than December 31st, 2031. I'm Alex Kosh, Managing Editor of The Maple, and this week I'm very pleased to be joined by the Ottawa Citizen's David Pugliese to discuss Canada's years-long journey to buy the F-35. David, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basics. Can you give us a very brief history of the F-35 itself and talk us through some of the features that distinguish it from other fighter jets?
Sure. So the F-35 program was launched in the mid-1990s. And so the Pentagon, what they wanted was a fighter jet that was low cost, had stealth capabilities, and would be a new generation aircraft. And the focus was on a lower cost and lower maintenance costs. The United States went to its allies and said, would you like to contribute some money to this research program? So in 1997, Canada signed on to the F-35 Research and Development Program. Now, there is no commitment under that to actually purchase the aircraft, but countries, you know, contributed several hundred million dollars a year for the ongoing development of the plane. Now, of course, most of the development was funded by the United States. But the idea that the Pentagon had was that this would be kind of a universal aircraft that the allies of the United States could use. So everyone would be flying the same type of plane, and then there'd so be strength in numbers, so to speak.
Very interesting that part of the purpose or part of the thinking behind the plane was low cost and low maintenance. And we'll get into that shortly. Let's rewind back to the Stephen Harper years. So, as you mentioned, this program has been in development since the 1990s. The Conservative government initially began a procurement process for the F-35. So why was that ultimately put on hold?
Yeah, so what happened was Peter MacKay, the defense minister at the time, stood up in the House of Commons and said, Canada's going to be purchasing the F-35. 5 minutes later, he stood up and said, oh, I made a mistake. We're going to have a competition. Then they flip-flopped again. And so the Harper government said, we're going to purchase the F-35. You may recall they had a big press conference where Peter MacKay sat in a... it was a fake F-35. It was made of plywood. And he gave the thumbs up in the true Top Gun manner. And so lots of pictures, and the procurement began. But what started happening was, first of all, the F-35 still had many, many technical problems. It wasn't a fully developed aircraft. So that started emerging from the United States. As well, our costs kept going up. So there was never, you know, I think the Conservatives said they're going to buy 65 aircraft for $9 billion. You know, then the parliamentary budget officer said, no, it's going to be much more. Auditor General weighed in much more. There's allegations that the Defense Department was lying about the actual cost, trying to hide the actual cost from the taxpayer. And so what happened was, this F-35 purchase became a real albatross for the Conservatives. In the 2015 time period, we've got the general election. By then, the Conservatives have put the F-35 purchase on hold. But Justin Trudeau comes along and says, well, a Liberal government will never buy the F-35. It doesn't work. It's, you know, we don't need a stealth capability, that type of thing. And then Trudeau gets elected and the flip-flop begins.
Can we talk a little bit about the stealth capability? I mean, it might sound obvious, like, what that means, but, like, what does that mean in practice? And, like, why did Trudeau, you know, say that Canada did not need this capacity?
So the stated main goal of a fighter jet for Canada is the defense of North America. That is the main goal. All governments have stated that. So when you fly up to intercept a 1950s era Russian bomber, you know, the Russians keep, you know, sending bombers like they did in the Cold War. It's not as much, you know, not as many times. And Canada does, or the NATO does the same thing to the Russians. So fighter jets would go up. They would identify the aircraft, and then, you know, is this game that would be happening. Well, you don't need stealth for that. You're flying up, you're intercepting this aircraft. What you do need stealth for is, and the F-35's other name is called Joint Strike Fighter. Strike fighter means that you're attacking enemy positions, cities, targets, that type of thing. And that's where you need the stealth. That's why the Americans wanted the stealth. So when they're going in to bomb Libya, for instance, they want aircraft that can't be seen that well on radar. Some, you know, some countries have found ways to get around stealth, but it's more accurately called low observable. So they're difficult to see on radar as they're coming in to bomb you.
Right. So this is a plane designed for, you know, aggressive military sorties, not just simply for defending North American airspace as kind of mandated by NORAD, for example.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that any weapon or any aircraft, any, you know, military vehicle is a weapon for, you know, war fighting. But yeah, definitely the F-35 was designed for that first strike capability, and that's why it that is in its name.
So it seems like, you know, obviously this was one component of Trudeau's case against the F-35 in 2015, but it seemed like the biggest problem that the Conservatives had in trying to pursue the purchase of this jet was the cost issue. That seemed to be the biggest political albatross for the Conservative Party. Is that would you say that's accurate?
That's partially accurate. I think what the Conservatives ran into is it was the aspect that they weren't telling the truth, or the Defense Department wasn't telling the truth. So you had the Defense Department and the Conservatives saying, oh, it's going to cost $9 billion, trust us. And then you had the Auditor General and the Parliamentary Budget Officer, two watchdog organizations, which have a lot of goodwill, so to speak, with Canadians, coming and saying, no, that's not the cost at all. And so there was the rising costs, the increasing technical problems with the F-35, and just this sense that the whole truth wasn't being told to the taxpayers.
And how was this received publicly? You know, when Trudeau was saying, like, we're not going to buy this plane, like, what was the kind of feeling at the time among the electorate and within the media?
Well, I think it was, you know, it was one election. I mean, he made various election promises, such as, you know, he was going to open up government transparency and access to information. Well, access to information under Trudeau has gotten even worse than it was under Harper. So, you know, the public takes in these election promises, and it sounds good. Like he said, Trudeau said, we're going to get a cheaper aircraft, and we're going to put that extra money into building ships for the Royal Canadian Navy. Now, what happened is we're getting, you know, the cost of the F-35 under the Liberals is $19 billion. So we're getting a more expensive aircraft. We're getting more of them and a more expensive aircraft. And there's not going to be any extra money going into Canadian shipbuilding, naval shipbuilding, which, by the way, is hundreds of billions of dollars over budget.
I've always wondered on the issue of how expensive these procurements always end up being, whether it's fighter jets or whether it's Navy ships. Why is that? Like, why do these things end up becoming so expensive? Is it just because, you know, the contractors and the government aren't upfront with us to begin with how much they're going to cost? Or, like, you know, why does that always seem to be the case?
There's a couple of things at play. There's public apathy, for instance. You know, people just kind of shrug. They get upset by many things, but for some reason, they don't get upset by hundreds of billions of dollars of tax dollars being wasted. So I'll give you an example. The Canadian Surface Combatant, that's the 15 new ships that are going to be built for the Royal Canadian Navy by Irving. The set budget was $25 billion. It is now, the Parliamentary Budget Officer says now, around $80 billion. You know, it's so there seems to be this disconnect, like the public doesn't kind of focus on this stuff. You know, people are protesting about, you know, we need more, we need better health care. We need, you know, we need better housing. Yet a military project goes from $25 billion to $80 billion. You know, if you were building a home and the, you know, the builder said, okay, this is going to cost you $500,000. And then they come in with a cost, hand you a bill that's three or four times the amount, you'd lose it. But, you know, it's just kind of tax dollars. It just floats around. So there's this public apathy. The other aspect is, there is no accountability in defense procurement. So these cost overruns, not one person has ever lost their job that I know of in government procurement, in defense procurement. No one. And not only that, in the Pentagon, for instance, or in the US system, if things are not delivered properly or there's problems with the things, the equipment that's delivered, there are penalties. You'll see some of the big defense companies, not all the time, but they sometimes have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in fines and their contracts are canceled. And there's that type of thing. That doesn't happen in Canada.
Yeah, it really seems like the kind of mantra of quote unquote fiscal responsibility never applies to military spending and procurement. I heard once that, you know, there's a, and I haven't looked into this closely, so I wonder if you can shed a bit of light on it. But my understanding is that quite a few executives of like military contractor companies and weapons manufacturers, many of them are former military officials or personnel. Is that the case? And like, does that have any impact in terms of like this kind of, I don't know, maybe it's like an old boys club where there isn't really any accountability or wrangling for better costs?
Well, there's certainly there's many of the executives of defense firms are ex-military, ex-Canadian military, ex-US military, you know, so you have that dynamic, but it comes down to governments. And unless governments crack down on this, a lack of accountability, and as well this intense secrecy, there won't be any changes. So, I mean, I think that's the one issue that, or two issues that you've got going there. The other aspect is the media coverage. You take a look. And, you know, you see a certain individual on television saying we have to, you know, defense budget is needs to be increased or we need this piece of equipment. Well, many of these, some of these people you see on CTV and Global, they're all former generals. So, wow, what a surprise that a former general says, you know, they want this and that. And a lot of these defense experts that you see at the universities and such, you know, Defense Department funds a lot of programs, academic programs, and there's a lot of connections between universities and the Defense Department. So there's not a lot of criticism of what's going on, these massive cost overruns.
I remember you flagged on the F-35 specifically, I think it was sometime last year. I can't remember the name of the guy now, but there was a Canadian Press article which interviewed Lockheed Martin's own test pilot and quoted him saying, yeah, this is the plane that Canada needs. What was his name?
Billy Flynn. So, yeah, that's a perfect example, right? You know, and Billy Flynn will say, oh, I no longer work for Lockheed Martin. Okay. And that's fine. You know, Canadian Press should interview that type of individual. However, the whole story was built on him. Right. On his saying the F-35 is the best aircraft ever. Well, In that article in particular, and this happens all the time, by the way, there is no counter to that. You know, so when I wrote my F-35 story the other day for the Ottawa Citizen, I put in some of the counter arguments from some of the social activists and the people that don't think this is a good purchase. You know, so what will that $19 billion buy you when it comes to hospitals, housing, medical programs? So there has to be, from a media perspective, there has to be that counter, in my view, anyways.
So coming back to Trudeau's own kind of about turn on the F-35, I think he explicitly said at one point that it, quote, does not work. So obviously here he was referring to the many, many technical problems that the F-35 has encountered. I remember that video that was circulating quite recently of an F-35 kind of precariously hovering over a runway and then kind of gracelessly sinking to the runway with the nose tilting forward and the pilot having to eject, in what looked like a very dangerous and painful situation. So have the concerns regarding the technical problems with the F-35 been addressed, or like what's going on there?
No. So what's happened is the Pentagon actually has, or the American system actually has a pretty good oversight system. So you have a government accounting office, which is similar to our auditor general. And they look at, they've looked at the F-35. A lot of other think tanks more critical of the F-35 have taken a look at the aircraft. And so currently at this point, last year it came out, I think the F-35 had 800 problems still to be solved. Seven of them were considered by the Pentagon as critical. Some of those problems are secret. We don't know what those problems are. For instance, at one point, the F-35, there was problems with it flying in cold weather. I don't know if
seems like a big
that
issue.
Eventually. Yeah. Yeah, big issue. And that's why the U.S. Air Force, for instance, uses F-22s in Alaska, although they have been introducing the F-35. So there's different ongoing technical issues. The F-35 is essentially like a giant flying computer, and so there's going to be bugs and problems all the time. The other thing that the Americans are trying to deal with is maintenance costs. F-35 at one point was costing I think it was $34,000 US for every hour it would fly. So Lockheed Martin has been trying to get that cost down. But there have been a number of U.S. lawmakers, and this stands in contrast to the Canadian system, where a number of U.S. lawmakers, and they're all, pro-military, but they say this aircraft is too expensive to put in the field. To maintain. And we're going to run into that problem with the Canadian surface combatant, these new ships. This just gives you an idea of these after costs for some of these big projects. And the Auditor General, Parliamentary Budget Officer, identified the maintenance for these new ships as it's going to cost the entire maintenance budget of the Department of National Defense. So what happens with the rest of the maintenance for the Army and Air Force and that type of thing? So, and that is an ongoing problem, that as these weapons become more sophisticated, they cost more to maintain and to keep going. And that's going to be a problem with the F-35.
So despite all this and Trudeau being, presumably well aware of these issues, when did the first signs emerge that he was going to renege on this original pledge not to buy the F-35? And what were his reasons, if any, for doing so at the time?
So what happened was they started a new competition, and lo and behold, I think it was 2017, and lo and behold, the F-35 was entered into the competition. So I think it was too difficult at that time to say, and probably illegal to say to a company, you can't enter this competition. And so this competition started. It's the government talking points. It's fair and transparent and all this stuff. But I don't think there was ever any thought that the F-35 would not be selected. The Royal Canadian Air Force has wanted this aircraft since the 1990s. Anyway, so last year they announced, unsurprisingly, that the F-35 had been selected, and now they're going to enter into negotiations with Lockheed Martin. And so, you know, fast forward to earlier this week or last week, and they made the official announcement.
I'm really curious, like, from the military perspective, like, why are they so keen for the F-35? You know, I can understand why Lockheed Martin have been pushing so hard for this, because obviously they have an interest in it. But, like, on the military side, like, why have they kind of, as you say, been wanting this since the 90s?
Because it's built by the United States, and we're our military is tied to the United States quite closely. They see it as, you know, the most advanced fighter aircraft at this point. However, the Americans are now, and the Europeans are now, working on the next generation fighter jet. So by the time our F-35s are delivered, who knows whether there's going to be something rolling off, you know, a new assembly line, or at least starting to appear and being a new generation aircraft. Then you've got the aspect of about, you know, whether inhabited fighter jets are going to be of value in the future. Ukraine has shown how inexpensive drones have started to change the face of warfare. Now they're, you know, in the U.S., they're looking at artificial intelligence to operate you call them uninhabited, used to be called unmanned aircraft, or UAVs or drones. And you'd have swarms of these drones attacking a target when someone's sitting back in Nevada with a computer joystick controlling it all. And seems to be the face of the coming technology of warfare. So having a pilot sitting in $100+ million fighter jet that can be potentially shot down quite easily. Does that make sense anymore?
Well, I don't know if you've seen Top Gun 2, Dave, but I was led to believe by Tom Cruise in that movie that, in fact, you do need piloted fighter jets, and specifically piloted F-35s, to do these impossible missions into geographically perilous areas in unnamed enemy territory. Are you suggesting that that's not the case, or that it's slightly misleading?
I think that technology is changing all the time. What you may see is, and they've been talking about this for a long time, the swarm tactics. And so you may see a manned or an inhabited fighter jet flying along, controlling 10 or 20 drones, then attacking a target. And so you have so many incoming smaller targets coming at you, it's so hard to defend. And that's what they're finding in Ukraine. Then is the next step, that you're using artificial intelligence to have a swarm of 150 small drones, so small that they're difficult to pick up on radar and they're difficult to shoot down, but each of them carry a weapon. You know, is that what's coming next? And so I think a, you know, potentially good case, that this is going to be the face of warfare, of future warfare, is certainly out there. Now, that having been said, the U.S. is putting new engines on the B-52 bomber. So it's going to fly to 2040, 2050, at that point, or 2060. At that point, it will be 100 years old. So the U.S. in particular likes to have an assortment of weapons to use in its various wars. So I'm not saying that inhabited aircraft are going to disappear. They may drop off in importance as drone warfare increases in importance.
So it was last year when the penny finally dropped, and we found out, surprise, surprise, after years of this back and forth, that Lockheed Martin were entering the final stages of landing the contract with the Canadian government. So was there really any surprise when this news broke? And like, what was the response from critics to this announcement? I'm sure there was nothing too revelatory about what they said, but just take us back to that point when that news broke.
Well, so I don't think anyone was surprised that the F-35 F-35 was selected. I certainly wasn't. I fully expected it. In some respects, the, quote, competition was almost theatrical, right? Some aerospace firms, particularly from Europe, didn't even bid because they figured the F-35 or the American Super Hornet were going to be selected. So they, you know, and putting together a bid costs tens of millions of dollars for these companies. It's not a process that you take lightly. So some of them didn't even bother. They just said, no, we're not interested, because they were reading the tea leaves. So what you had was you had the Super Hornet and the Saab Gripen going up against the F-35. Now, Boeing, which makes the Super Hornet, made a critical mistake on the civilian side by launching a trade war against Bombardier. At that point, their bid was, their campaign to sell Canada on Super Hornets was dead in the water. And ultimately, that left the Gripen going up against the F-35. The Gripen is designed to operate from short runways, snow-covered runways, with a small amount of infrastructure. You know, the problem is, this Swedish aircraft, it's not American. So, if you're actually looking at what makes sense for the country, you would think that having imagery of Gripens taking off from a dirt road in Sweden covered in snow. Yeah. Gee, that might make sense for a snowbound nation. But anyway, the Gripen wasn't selected. And so obviously they're moving forward with the F-35.
Why is the factor that the F-35 is American made so important? I mean, it might seem obvious, but, you know, Sweden is an ally of Canada. So, like, why is the U.S. factor so significant in the bidding process?
So there is technology aspect, computers, talking to computers and that type of thing. There's American made components as well that might go into aircraft that if the Americans might not want you to have unless you're buying American. Don't forget, an F-35 purchase is good for the United States, particularly in Texas. And it supports a lot of American jobs. So there's a lot of pressure. There was a lot of pressure on Trudeau or the Liberal government to select the F-35. As well, they can go to the Americans and say, look, we are contributing to North American security. We're buying one of your products. These are all the back channel pressures and discussions that don't come out in public but that are a major factor in the selection of some of this equipment. So, the quote defense analysts will say, well, we have to have an American aircraft because we work with the Americans all the time, so that interoperability and communications will be flawless. Well, in the air war over Libya, the aircraft going to bomb Libyan targets were a selection of American, a selection of European aircraft, that type of thing. So there's a whole bunch of aircraft in the mix and everyone seemed to communicate pretty good. You know, so you wonder about that interoperability aspect. I think the major issue is Canadian military is so tied to the U.S. military. You see critics saying, well, we're seen as their little brother. You see that often in articles. So take that for what you will.
So the last jet, according to the contract, must be delivered by 2031. With all these technical issues, I mean, is there any chance that deadline is going to be blown? And, you know, the fact that this is almost another decade of technological advancement, which goes back to your point earlier of, like, you know, more movement towards drone technology. Like, what do you make of that timeline in general?
Well, actually, it's going to be quite aggressive because they're going to start delivering the first aircraft in 2026, and all 88 aircraft are going to be delivered 5 or 6 years later. So that's a lot of planes coming to Canada at a time where the Canadian forces doesn't have is in the midst of a recruiting problem and a retention problem. So they're you know, while technological issues with the F-35 may be solved, you know, another question might arise is whether there's going to be enough people to maintain and operate these planes.
Very interesting. Well, thanks so much for your time, Dave. It's been really great having you on the show to walk through some of these details and the broader context surrounding it. Do you want to remind listeners where they can go to read your work on this and other topics related to the military?
Well, I'm at the Ottawa Citizen, published under what's called Defense Watch. You can find that on the website there. I also write for Esprit de Corps magazine, so you can find my stuff there. And I'm on Twitter under Dave Pugliese. I don't know what my Twitter handle is, but just search and you'll see the insults and you'll see me. So
great. Thanks so much, Dave. Great having you on.
Great. Thank you.